Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2014, and you are listening to episode 93. My name is Rob, and that's Jason over there.
Hey.
Never any energy. There it is. And we're back, as we always are every week, like clockwork. Here to entertain you.
Yes.
And brighten your day just a little bit.
It's our sole purpose.
Well, my sole purpose. Your sole purpose, apparently, is to be boring.
Yeah. Because I just want to be boring and never say anything entertaining at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not boring.
You're pretty boring.
Only in real life.
All right. Fair enough. In real life, you are quite dull.
Only IRL, as they say.
Hate
in
that.
In the onlines.
In the online. I hate that. I don't talk in those ways.
Whenever I get on the line, that's how people always talk. They're like, LOL, IRL, OMG.
I hate all that.
Me too.
I hate it.
I use real words.
How's it going?
It's going good.
What's new?
Oh, I don't know. What is new? Not much. I've just been working on some projects.
What kind of projects?
Oh, I'm trying to get Ramblers up to snuff.
Yeah.
Working on that. Based on some feedback I got on Unpub, it was really good. Mm-hmm. So hopefully by the time you guys are hearing this, I've already playtested it a couple times. Yeah, because it's like 2 weeks out. So yeah. I'm planning to do some playtesting this coming weekend, actually.
Okay.
Which is well before you hear this. So yeah, so I've been working on Ramblers, trying to get it ready. To get more playtesting done. I'm really happy with the feedback I got on Unpub on it.
Good.
I had a few other games I needed to button up and send off to some places. So
cool.
I got most of that done. I still have to send out Transylvania. So simply because I need to make a couple more tweaks to that. I feel like it's in a really good place right now. Mm-hmm. I got some feedback that was really counter to what I thought.
Yeah.
By someone who hadn't played it, somebody who just had read the rules, but this person's really good at reading rules and giving feedback.
Okay.
And now it's making me kind of question the whole game and the way it's played.
Question your entire reality.
Yeah, or the entire reality of Transylvania Trading Company. So
that's deep, man.
Anyways, good times.
Right on. Yeah. Water balloon washout, went to the printer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the time we talk now, it may actually be actually printing by the time you guys listen to this.
That's pretty exciting.
So it's
yeah, you know, and in fact I didn't hear the final on that. Last time I heard is I was resending them another image file of the card that was too dark.
Yeah.
And you got a final proof that looked better?
Oh, looked great. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, good. Yeah.
It looked exactly like it should have.
Okay.
So I just signed off on that one. I didn't show it to you cuz
yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I think I got it on a Friday and I wanted to have it back to them on Monday.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure. Okay. Great.
I knew you'd approve because it looked better.
Great. Fantastic. So I didn't screw up then. They really did use the wrong file the last time.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah, I don't know.
Who knows?
But according to them, it was your fault.
Okay.
But I kind of expected that them to say that. So.
Okay.
And that's just because they said, no, if you look at this and you look at this, it's wrong. I was like, yeah, but that's not what we're looking at. And they're like, but it's wrong. And I was like, he's just going to send another file. And they're like, okay.
Okay. All right. Well, so that's exciting. So water balloon washout, it's out of our hands now. It's going to happen. It's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening and, right now.
I'm excited because, you know, what I feel like is despite their best efforts, we're still going to print a game. So.
It's still going to happen.
No. That's not true. I mean, they print quality stuff. And we just had some hiccups in the road. We're new at this.
Kind of sounds like they're new at this.
I feel like maybe they're not used to dealing with new people, which is weird because, you know, it seems like new people would be coming to them all the time.
Well,
maybe not all the time.
No, I mean, we could, when uploading the files to their FTP site, I could see some of the names of some of their other clients who have also uploaded files to their FTP site.
What kind of security is that?
Well, I did not pursue that.
No, but I mean, that's not cool.
No, I didn't even try to open or download any files from this. So maybe I didn't have the ability to download anything from it. I don't know. I know that I couldn't delete a file that I had uploaded and I couldn't rename a file that I uploaded. So I had write, but not rewrite or delete access. I don't know if I had the ability to download anything. Nevertheless, I could see the names of some of their other clients. They have some pretty big name clients. So it made me think that, that Water Balloon Washout was not a priority job for them.
Right.
Which is kind of too bad, because they also... In looking at that, I could tell that it was not a priority job for them. And the way they treated you also made me feel like you were not a priority job for them. So that's kind of a bummer.
But. It is. So we'll see. Like, in the end, if it, I still say that in the end, if it turns out great, I would use them again.
Mm-hmm.
Only because now that I know all the things to just do without asking.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
would be 1,000 times better.
Right. Right. So. I mean, I kind of feel the same way. Like, lately, I've been toying a little bit more with the idea of doing a Kickstarter for Rocket Wreckers.
Right.
And I, again, that the way that works is now a known quantity. Right?
Right.
I mean, we know how they do business, right. what kind of stuff they need, and that would be, we would have started over from square one again if we were going to go with right. a different company.
Plus, the other thing is, too, they're so close to us that we can just drive over and get
it. Yeah, that's a huge thing. Yeah. It's a huge thing. I mean, you'll probably be able to fit all of your copies in the back of your truck, right?
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I asked them, so this is, here's a little pressure point that kind of frustrated me.
Okay.
This kind of shows you how I was treated sometimes.
Yeah.
So I sent a I got a message from my, salesman, and he said, "Hey, just want to let you know, got everything. Everything's all set. We are in process." So what does that mean to you?
We are in process.
Like, you know, the way he said, like, we're processing. Now we're processing. Like, so when I heard that, I was like, does that mean they're printing already? Because I'm like, there's like a 3 to 4 week, you know, there was, 4 to 5 weeks was what I was finally quoted. I was originally quoted 3 to 4. Then I was quoted 4. Then I was quoted 8. And then the holidays passed because of the whole snafu with us having the file issues. And then it dropped back down to 4 to 5, which was great.
Yeah.
Which tells me that if we printed it before the holidays, we probably wouldn't have gotten it that much earlier anyways.
Right. It would just be getting done maybe now-ish.
Yeah. So, but anyways, so I just replied back and said, does that mean it's printing? Question mark. And then I below that I said, hey, can you just let me know how many boxes to expect? I want to make sure I can fit into my truck so that I can, you know, just come down and pick it up. I don't need to like arrange to get something else or bring a second vehicle. He replies back with this huge diatribe. I've told you before, it's going to take 4 to 5 weeks for printing. We like blah blah blah, like all this blah 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 blah. And I replied back and was, just, and I believe I said, dude, I understand that, but you said it's in process and I don't know what that means. I was asking if that meant it was printing.
Yeah.
He immediately replied back, very apologetic.
Yeah.
And was like, no, these are the steps that have to happen in the process before it prints.
Okay.
And like, he was much nicer then, but it's a little frustrating. I'm like, I'm not a total moron. Like,
yeah.
You said something that was confusing to me. It
You're
was
using words
question.
That you have not defined.
And in his defense, email, you cannot always relate to what you're saying. So, you know, he might have thought I was like, wow, we're printing. All right. You know, but that's not what I was saying.
Yeah.
I was just asking.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so lots of information learned and gathered in this process. And I'm still really thrilled that we've been able to share so much of this on the show, you know?
Oh, me too. And we'll be able to share a lot more on the show too.
Yeah.
So basically we'll get it from them. And then I'm just going to start shipping it. One of the great things is I would say about 50% of the copies, I don't have to ship, because
great.
You know, there were local people that bought them or people who bought them with other people. So like I can just give them to them. And so that's going to save me a lot of money
and
a lot of time, on the shipping stuff. So that'd be great. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just have copies ready to sell. We will put those up on our website somehow. I'm not sure exactly how yet. I think we have, I think through our provider, we have a thing we can do to just do like a checkout thing via PayPal.
Cool.
So we'll probably set that up. And and we'll get that out to people. So
fantastic.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah, right on. Cool. So, yeah, Water Balloon Washout is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should, it's like 13 minutes in the show. Maybe we should talk about what we've been playing.
Yeah, right. We got a little tangent there.
So,
we played Pirates of the Spanish Main.
We did. You mentioned that a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got to play it at lunch. Mm-hmm. Our waitress belittled us. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. And I said shortly after that, if you want a good tip, don't make fun of your customers.
Yeah. She's like, oh, look, you guys have these little toys here or something like that.
Yeah.
She used the term little toys.
Little
here.
Toys.
And Pirates of the Spanish Main, as Rob has talked about before, is these little cards, and they transform via the pieces in them into these little pirate ships.
Little cutouts out to assemble pirate ships. Yeah.
But that game is ridiculously simple.
Yeah, super simple.
But super fun.
Really smart. Really well done.
We,
yeah.
We played
one short game.
Yeah.
Which is one ship.
Which had
each.
One ship. And we figured out that unless you're a total moron, you're going to win if you go first, especially if you were like me and had the bigger ship.
Depending on what ship you get, because when you buy that game in boosters, you just get what you get. I picked out two strong ships, and yours was a little bit stronger.
Mine, I rolled very well, and mine had really powerful cannons, and it did not end well for you. So we're interested to try it again with several ships.
Yeah, I think like a fleet of three you know, is a good way to
and
go.
Especially to give people a heavy hitter, a medium like the one you had, and then like one of the small fast ones.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. The game has a ton of potential. And it's a bummer that it didn't take off and it got shut down. I did a little research on that. It was actually WizKids was owned by Topps, the trading card company.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was Wizards of the Coast. I thought it was a Hasbro company, but no, it was owned by Topps, and then Topps shut it down. And then I think shortly after that, Topps went out of business. And I'm not sure who owns the Pirates name right now, or the IP for that, but somebody owns it. Anyway.
I kind of want to know who that is. If anybody knows who that is,
I think
tell
it's
us.
On Wikipedia.
So that's true.
Yeah, I think I read that on Wikipedia. And I just don't remember it now off the top of my head.
It's a really cool game, and it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So and it stores flat, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so cool. You can put the pieces back into the cards and just put it back in your pocket.
Yep.
Really, really smart.
Yeah, and they lock in there really well. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed by that.
Very well engineered, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a smart thing. So that's what we've been playing. We had a lot of fun with that.
Hoping to play it again soon with the bigger fleet, and maybe some more people even, because you can probably play with multiple people, right?
I assume so. I don't really know, but I assume
so. It seems literally infinitely expandable.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, different fleets, different ships. Yeah, sure, why not? I have plenty of those things. I probably have 25 ships, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I wonder if I'd look online. I wonder if they still sell them like on eBay or something.
Oh, I bet you can find boosters. Yeah. I bet you can.
Sure. I actually think I may have a booster pack somewhere in my house.
Oh, really?
Because at Gen Con, like, they used to have sweet swag bags where they gave you stuff.
Right.
I got that one year.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And there was some old dude who used to play it at the game shop we went to, and I was going to give him a copy, and then I never saw him, so I didn't. Mm. I just kept it because...
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have any other ships, so I didn't know what to do with it.
Right. But, well, you can play a whole game with one booster.
That's true.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at the time, otherwise I might have.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's enough of that. Moving on to our feature of the week.
Feature of the week.
That's pretty good. We wanted to talk about tactics, you know, strategy and that kind of stuff, which is a kind of a important part of miniatures games, which, you know, Pirates is a minis game, you know,
right.
Miniature ships. So tactics. Now for me, if I was going to define this in my terrible way, I would say tactics are kind of what the human puts into the movement of pieces on the board and arranging them and when to take actions and what actions to take, you know, not just simply roll and move the piece or move the certain number of spaces and take your action. It's about having an open area in which you can maneuver and position yourself to better take advantage of the powers of your pieces and of your opponent's pieces, I guess. You think it's a fair way to put it?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you're the minis gamer here. You've played a whole lot more minis games than I have.
I was in the past,
Yeah.
Not that I have anything against minis games.
Right.
I would still play a good minis games.
Right. But you've done that a whole lot more than I have.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, the reason to get out of it was the same reason a lot of people get out of Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really expensive to play those games if you want to be competitive, because you need to have a lot of pieces.
Right. Yeah, and I don't really have a head for all that stuff. Like, I mean, if we were playing pirates, like, with a bigger set, you know, big fleets, you would probably still slaughter me, because I just don't have the brain for it the way that you do. But, I mean, you've trained yourself in right, right. A lot
and
of
I
ways.
And, I mean, there was a time when I was terrible at those games.
Yeah.
And my friend Brad Chug, who was, like, amazing at any type of game like mm-hmm. that, just he just taught me, he tutored me on, I mean, how to win at those games, and we played
mm-hmm.
probably 1,000 games, you know, mm-hmm. and I mean, over the course of that, you just kind of get ahead for it, you know. I mean, that's not true. I guess not everybody's going to end up having a head for it. You need to be, like, I think to be really good at a tactics game like that, you really need to be able to think a couple turns ahead, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like with chess, sure. right? And that's fun. What's funny is with chess, I can't think a couple games ahead, like a couple turns ahead.
Really?
I'm terrible at chess, which I've never understood, because, like, a lot of these games are just complicated versions of chess.
Yeah.
Basically, you know what I mean? The same type.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah.
Somehow, giving me those extra options, I get better at the game than if I have less options, which I don't mm-hmm. quite understand. I know that the tactical games have super helped define who I am as a designer, because yeah. while I don't design games like that, a lot of those games are completely predicated on variable player powers,
right.
which is one of my favorite things.
You are pretty quick and pretty efficient at writing card powers and player powers
right.
and things. Yeah, yeah. You're much better and faster at that than I am, too.
And it comes from playing all those games. I mean, every unit had a unique power. So
right.
once you know what I mean?
The so kinds many of powers, things that you can do.
Exactly.
Sure, sure.
So, but yeah, tactic games, they're for a different audience, right?
Yeah, they sure
I mean,
are.
Like, my wife, she just looks at those and it's like, never yeah, going yeah. to play one of those. I mean,
right.
she'd watch me play the games and just not understand.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, first of all, she had no reason to want to,
mm-hmm.
Just because it wasn't, you know what I mean, her type of game.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, it just, you know, I mean, it's just not her style.
Right.
And you're not super into games with lots of tactics.
I'm not. I mean, I totally get it. I really, really get it. Like, even on a kind of a foundational level of, I want the cool sculptured thing. Like, I
right.
like when a couple of years ago when we were playing D&D together, I bought right. a lot of D&D minis because I like the thing, you know? So on that kind of fundamental level, I get it. And then the idea of using that thing in a game, it clicks nicely in my head, but then I don't play because I'm so bad at it. So let's talk about positives and negatives.
All right. Well, positive, I mean, negative, first off,
uh-huh.
Huge learning curve. Even if you're good at one of those games, like mm-hmm. at least for me, like when you would sit me down, when we switched from playing D&D minis consistently to playing Dreamblade,
mm-hmm.
when that came out, it took me months to get good at that game.
Sure.
Because the barrier for entry is really high. Now, my friend Brad, he could sit down on a brand new one and just be like, boom, I'm good at this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how do you do that? But it's because he just has this, like, amazing mind for it. And I have to learn. But, you know, so I guess there's a huge barrier for entry, especially if you haven't played games with lots of tactics in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't even just have to be a miniatures game. I mean, you know, I heard recently on, I was listening to a shout out for the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast.
Sure.
Jason Kotarski is the host, and Andy Lennox is kind of, they call him a reoccurring character on the show. And they were talking about Pixel Tactics, and there's a lot of tactics built into that.
Yeah.
And it's a card game.
Hmm.
At least that's the way I understood it when they were describing it. I've never actually played the game. But, you know, so you can have a card game with tactics built into it. It's just so easy to visualize in a miniatures game.
Yeah.
You know, where you can really see the layout of the board.
Mm-hmm.
But you can even see that in a game like Risk, right?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, granted, there's a lot of luck built into Risk, but there's also a lot of strategy.
A lot of tactics based on where you position your
right.
forces and how you attack and how aggressively you attack and so on.
Right. I mean, I think let's take Risk for a second here.
Sure.
The two main things that lose Risk for people who don't know who aren't good at Risk,
mm-hmm.
poor placement in the beginning. Yep. I would say that's the number one thing that loses the game.
Pretty harsh, yeah.
I mean, if you're playing a game against somebody who's not good at Risk, you can win the game with placement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you place in a few key areas and you're like, okay, I'm going to win this game.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless I really get hosed on the dice, I'm going to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, it's not knowing when to say when.
Right.
You know, so many people, like, and I used to do this when I was a kid, I would just run till my army was down to one dude.
Right.
And the other person would just run right back up that chain, and then I'd run them right back to end.
Right.
And that's why the game took forever.
Right, right. Because, you're not being smart about it. Yeah.
Other negatives, mm-hmm. a lot of the tactics games are to keep them fresh, they have to add a lot of components,
mm-hmm.
Which of course
means more money.
Means more money.
Yeah.
So expensive. Mm-hmm. High barrier for entry and expensive. Mm-hmm. You got any negatives you can think of?
Well, in a lot of the modern miniatures games, you don't play on a grid. You know, you play on kind of just an open battlefield area or something.
Right, like a mage knight was like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. You know, and so you're just kind of moving on an empty area. And so they can feel kind of imprecise. You know, if you're not following a specific grid for the move, like classic Battletech, you're on a hex grid and, you know, right. your position is your position. And there's no, if you bump the piece, well, you just bump it back within the boundaries of that hex.
Right.
But a lot of modern minis games and tactical games like that, your piece, you go about there and he ends about there and you kind of go measure base to base, but there's a little fuzziness to that, which I've always been a little uncomfortable with.
Me too, because
I'm always worried about not being fair to the other player.
Right. Well, and in a competition, I'm always worried about the other player not being fair.
Well, naturally, yeah.
In like Mage Knight, that was one of the, I never played that, but some yeah. people I knew did, and you used a measuring tape, and I never liked that.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, because the games I played all had squares on them.
Yeah.
D&D Minis was a full grid, and then Dreamblade was like a 16 squares, I think.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was a lot smaller. And you moved, you know, it was almost like grid-based movement mm-hmm. with 16 grids because they were so big.
Yeah.
But one of the things in D&D Minis that was always a thing was line of sight. Was like, yeah. Can I see? And I mean, I'd get really good at eyeballing line of sight. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was a thing. Like, if you were good at eyeballing line of sight, you could set things up that other people wouldn't see because they'd glance and say, nope. And then you'd pull out your little ribbon and you'd hold it off and be like, nope, I can see you mm-hmm. and I'm going to nuke you. So like that can be overly complex.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of that stuff feels kind of fiddly to me sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Then that, I think that just contributes to the barrier for entry. Like,
right.
Oh, I'm going to do this to you. Oh no, you can't see me mm-hmm. because I have cover and,
right.
That's something I always hated about the game.
Yeah.
Because it was frustrating. You
right.
know?
That bugs me. But positives, it's the player interaction is much, much more intense. I mean, there's,
yes,
it's basically 100% player interaction.
Yep.
Which a lot of people really, really like about that. And that's why they play those games, you know?
And it does well for competition. So
right.
If you like competition, also really big positive.
Right, right. And when you win, man, you really feel that win because
right.
because you know that you probably have most of the same pieces as that other dude sitting there and you won because you were the smarter player.
Right.
You know?
And my friend Brad always used to say this and I love this because so many times you'd be like, oh, I lost because of the dice. And he would always say, if you're at a moment in the game where the dice roll is going to determine whether you win or lose, you did something to put yourself at that moment in the game. You made a mistake earlier.
Yeah.
Because you should never do that.
Yeah.
Even though that happened to us all the time. It happened to him all the time. I mean,
sure.
But it was just to remind you, it's your fault.
Yeah, yeah. You should never let yourself be put in that situation to start with. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very exciting kind of game, and it's a very personally rewarding experience when you win.
Yep.
You know, and that's really exciting.
Well, because it's that like head-to-head direct competition,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Right. Much in the same way that, you know, that like paintball is that kind of thing, you know? It's because my skill prevailed over your skill.
Here's something else I would say is a positive to these games.
Uh-huh.
Like, at least the ones I played, in a lot of them, actually, you build your own army, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there is entertainment value of sitting by yourself and building your army
sure.
and running through the numbers. Not for everyone, but, like, I thought it was super fun.
Yeah.
You're like, what would happen if I put these guys together? And then, you know, I remember with D&D Minis counting squares. Like,
mm-hmm.
okay, on turn one, if I use these two guys and start this way on this map, I can do this. Like, oh, wow. And then counting out different things. And I thought that was super fun. And it's super dorky.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just cool that you have that kind of solo aspect to it as well.
Yeah,
where
sure.
you can say, what could I do with this and that, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Yeah, and people do that with Magic. I mean, we've talked to hardcore Magic players before who will spend days building a deck for a match or for a tournament mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, so there can be a lot of satisfaction, a lot of personal ownership in a game like that, you know, and that's pretty exciting too. Yeah, so I don't think I'll ever design a game that's real heavy on that. I mean, Maelstrom has that in it.
Yeah, Maelstrom definitely has some tactical movement in it.
Right, positioning and so on and so forth. But I don't know that I would ever go to the intensity of Magic or of a minis game. I don't know that I would ever attempt that.
See, that's something I would love to do.
Yeah.
But as just a lowly designer on my own,
yeah,
that sounds really difficult to do. So big companies out there who are interested in having a minis game, give me a call. I'll help you out. I mean, to do it on my own, it just sounds terrible. I mean, like I said, that's why so many times I emulate a lot of the things from those games in my designs without actually having those things in my designs.
Sure.
Because it's just easier to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Man, when we talk about this stuff, like, I wish that I could sit down with my friends and play Dreamblade still.
Yeah.
Because, like, I loved it. I loved it. Yeah. You know,
who published that?
Dreamblade was Wizards.
Was it?
Okay. Coast. Right. Yeah. Yeah. They did D&D minis and Dreamblade.
Right.
They jacked both of them up in the end. Dreamblade, they just canceled because they couldn't afford to keep paying out the tournament money they promised.
Oh, okay. And there's some pretty elaborate minis with that too. Yeah.
In D&D minis, I think the thing, you know, so many things of the game, like you said, it's direct play interaction. And the idea is there is randomness in the game. Mm-hmm. You roll dice, there is randomness. It is your job to mitigate the randomness. Like, that's how you win. Mitigate the randomness and more than your opponent can.
Yeah.
And they introduced some things in the game that were just, like, made it so it was impossible to mitigate the randomness because it was 50-50 shots of crazy things happening.
Really?
And I was trying to qualify for the World Championships the last year that I played. And I had played in those the 2 years before, but I was just kind of behind the eight ball. I'd missed some tournaments. And I went to Gen Con and I tried to play and this guy beat me. And after he beat me, I don't even remember if I continued the tournament. I was like, this is what it's going to be like. Like, these are what the new minis they're coming out with are. I hadn't bought some of the newest minis and it was like, this is so random. It's not, you know, and for a tactical game, randomness is the enemy.
It sure is.
So for the company that's making it to be like, all right, we're going to add a lot of randomness. It's like,
you're neutering your game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Randomness is for people. Like, in games like that, randomness is for people who aren't good. Like, I'm not very good at this game, so I want the highly random pieces, because every once in a while, I might just get lucky.
Right.
So.
And win because I'm lucky and not because
it's I'm like good. It's like sitting across from somebody who's playing poker terribly and making terrible choices and winning huge pots because it just happens that way sometimes, you know?
Right.
Sometimes really dumb decisions pay off when you're taking risks. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, they don't. Sometimes they do. And, you know, it's frustrating when that happens.
Right. Yeah, it's like people winning in a slot machine saying, I'm so good at slot machines.
Right.
Yeah.
I just pull that arm like tomorrow.
I have technique to when I hit the max bet button.
Yeah, max bet, pull that arm. Woo! Yeah.
Most of them don't even have an arm pull anymore.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah. I don't play slot machines.
I've played mostly slot machines. I started, last couple times we went to casino, I played blackjack, and I much preferred that.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was doing something.
And you were actually somewhat in control.
Yeah.
Percentage-wise, you were somewhat in control.
Right.
You had like a 50-some percent chance of winning.
I was making choices, at least.
Right.
Yeah. Other than how much do I want to lose. Yeah.
I think I played a slot machine like twice in my life. The one time I put in like $1. Like, I think I put in $5. I was on a cruise ship. I was just trying to lose because I started to play. I was like, this is really stupid. So I'm just like, max bet. And then I won like $50. I was like, sweet, cash out.
Jerk. Yeah.
So no skill required.
No, not at all.
They actually say that on some of those.
In some cases they're required. Yeah,
the way you play will not affect your chance of winning.
Right. Player input has no effect on the outcome.
So tactics. Yeah, let's talk about tactics. So let's think about real quick here, because I know we've been talking about this for a little while. What are some applications of tactics in maybe kind of a different gaming space? Because obviously the big board with the miniatures, you know, I would still argue you can have very tactical games with just cards, right? I mean, if you are if you're playing the cards out in a certain way or trying to group them in a certain way and you're fighting, like, I feel like there needs to be that sort of direct player interaction to call it tactical. I could be wrong, but I guess in my mind, that's kind of what I picture. You have to have that direct player interaction. beating each other.
In a game like this, yeah. I mean, if we're talking about a video game, then you're working against the AI of the video game. But
or multiplayer if it's online.
Right, yeah, yeah. But for a tabletop game, it's difficult to create that AI, and so it seems to work better if it's against another human. So yeah, so trying to strategize against that. There's that Steve Jackson game, Ogre. Where one player is a big ogre and is way more powerful than all the other players that are like, are they dwarves or something trying to fight the ogre?
I thought it was about tanks.
Oh, maybe it's tanks versus the ogre. It's
about tanks. I think you just made that up.
I don't know. Anyway, but one big powerful guy versus a bunch of little guys. And if you are smart in the way you approach that combat, that conflict, I should say, if you use your individual powers properly and work as a team or work alone in the right way, you can win or lose based on that, basically, you know? So that's an interesting, way to do that. I'd really love to try Ogre sometime. It's a massive game though. It's such a huge game. Like the box for that game stands almost as tall as I do, I think. Not that tall, but it's like a 3.5 foot long box. It's massive.
You're like, the box is as tall as me. Well, no, it's like half that, yeah. But it's still impressive.
It's a huge box. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. But you're right. I mean, the way you are accustomed to learning different powers, which makes you good at writing different card powers and player powers and things. And that's a good way that you've managed to translate some of the skills learned from tactics games into what we're doing here.
Right.
Yeah. Any other lessons to learn from that?
I don't think so. I mean, there are so many different types of games for so many different types of people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so many people who consider themselves even hardcore gamers would look at a game like that and be like, no way.
Yeah.
Not going to happen, you know?
Right.
So.
Right. I wonder if there's a way. Well, I don't know. That's a longer conversation about using resources as units. I don't know. Whatever. That's a waste of time.
All right.
Okay. Sorry. Tangent. Let's move on.
You get to practice the pitch now.
I do. Yay. Okay. Practicing the pitch. Long-time listeners will probably remember the tower building game that I pitched probably more than a year ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
The tower building game where I was thinking about using four different types of resource cubes to fill in slots on cards, and you stack the cards up like the floors of a skyscraper. And based on what floors you add to the building and what combinations and numbers, you would get multipliers to your final score at the end, and on and on and on. And I really liked the idea and the visual of stacking things up like that, but just the theme was so dull and boring, and I couldn't think of any way to make it exciting or interesting in the slightest.
Yeah, I remember talking about that. Like, I'm like, this game is really fun, but no one's going to think it's fun because it's about building towers.
Yeah, I don't even know that it was all that fun, to be honest. I mean, I feel like it could have been.
I think it was clever.
It could have been fun, but the reality of it, I just was not there yet. And so I kind of let it go, which made me sad because I really liked the idea. And so I was thinking about it again because I sometimes think about the old stuff that didn't work. And I was thinking about it the other day, and I wonder if there's any other way to do that. So I was thinking of it in terms of building an inn.
Okay.
You know, or a tavern. So where the players are tavern owners, or they're trying to build a tavern. And I'm envisioning this as a crossroads, you know, like a major crossroads in some medieval land, where two big thoroughfares between big cities cross. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of traffic through here, and the players are innkeepers or tavern owners who are trying to build their own individual taverns and inns at this crossroads. And they want to make as much money as they possibly can from all the travelers that are coming through here.
Makes sense.
Okay. And with the original tower building game, I had four different resources. I think they were electrical and water and heating and you know, concrete or steel or whatever. And so complicated, keeping track of all this stuff. And I wanted to simplify that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I'm thinking, you know, building one tower up just isn't interesting enough. But if I could, maybe instead of having his tower build tall, maybe I could only make it a few levels high, but maybe it kind of expand out to the sides.
Okay.
You know? So this is the idea. The players are these tavern owners, and they are, over the course of the game, they are trying to build and expand their tavern to make more money, to attract more patrons, so they can hire more staff to staff the inn, and the bigger they make it, the more people they can attract and the more gold they can make. And in the end of the game, whoever has the most gold, who's earned the most money, is the winner. All right. So at the beginning of the game, everybody basically gets a free foundation piece,
okay.
You know, foundation for the main section of the tavern. This is basically the bar. You know,
right?
They don't have any rooms or anything right now. They don't have a kitchen. They basically have some grog that they can sell, and they have some people to staff it, right? And you start the game also with some gold that you can use to buy stuff. So on a turn, let me go through turn options here, okay? On your turn, you're going to get one action. So on that turn, you can do a few different things. You can draw a card if you want. And a card is something that will give you resources. It might give you gold. You get a boost in gold. It might attract a nobleman who's passing through to your tavern. It might give you some kind of a way to an attack or harm or influence one of your opponents. Okay, so it's a way to get more stuff. Okay, you can, in addition to drawing a card, another option, you can spend gold that you have to buy a resource. And I decided to just keep it just generic resource cubes. Okay. I was thinking there would be food and beer and you know, tavern wenches and stuff, but it's simple. I just call it generic resources. Okay. Okay. And so you can spend gold to buy resources. Okay. To improve your tavern. Or you can buy a tile to add to your tavern, which is to expand the size of your tavern. Okay. At start of every round, for every tile that you have in your tavern, you get one gold. Right. So beginning of the game, you have a set pool of gold. You have one tile. It's the foundation of your tavern. And to start of your turn, you're going to get one gold per turn for that tile. All right. And that's all you get. And that's so you're going to then start spending this gold to do more stuff.
Right. To presumably earn more gold.
Exactly. Right. Okay. So you've got this main foundation, and the foundation has four slots on it for resources. Okay. And let's say that in order to fully staff your tavern to be prepared to move forward, you need four resources. Let's say that's a tavern wench, that's food, that's beer, and that's I don't know, tables and chairs, a bartender, who knows, whatever. That's why I'm saying generic resources.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Once I fill all four resource slots on that tile, that tavern foundation, the main room, then I'm now going to get some bonus from that tile. Okay. And that will, and that's a one-time bonus that I get as soon as I fill that slot. I immediately get that one bonus, which is probably in this case plus one resource cube. I can grab it from the pool. Okay. And now that I have all four slots on that foundation filled, now I have the option to buy another tile.
Okay.
Okay. To add to my tavern. Now I have two options though. I can buy another tile to go on top of the one that I've got, because I have the four resource cubes to support it, mm-hmm. or I can buy a smaller tile to kind of stick on the side.
Right. Yeah. Like,
you know,
it's butting out the side.
Yeah. Maybe I can add a kitchen now, you know? Mm-hmm. And so as you're going through the game, you're going to buy different tiles, and different tiles will cost different amounts based on what kind of a bonus they give you when you add it and successfully supply it, give it enough resource cubes so that it can now be a fully functioning part of your tavern. So that's, I mean, that's basically it. You know, periodically, there will be noblemen that are available, and sometimes one of them will come by the inns, and they will be attracted to whichever inn has the most X or the most Y, you know, the biggest kitchen, the most tiles, whatever. Okay. A nobleman, when they're attracted to your inn, will be played face up in front of your inn. They might be pulled away by another player. Maybe another player can play a card to steal a nobleman over or attract them over to their tavern, steal them from somebody else. You can play cards, maybe make somebody lose a resource.
Might be cool to not just have noblemen, but have bad people coming through too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Who are attracted to you with the most X or...
with the most gold, maybe. Right. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. So, yeah, that can happen.
Like every turn they stay there, they siphon one gold away from you.
Right.
You know, because they're stealing or something.
Right. The game ends, I think, either when the deck of cards is empty or when we're out of tiles to build. And then you do final scoring. Whoever has the most gold is the winner. Noblemen will give you bonuses for final scoring. You know, they will say, you know, this guy will give you for every three tiles you have, you get plus one gold at the end of the game or something. You know, there are different ways to do that. But kind of basically that's a whole game where you're building this tavern. You could be building up, you could be building outward, and trying to attract the most business. Which I think is kind of a fun idea because it's kind of, you know, you're actually building a structure on your tabletop, which I think is a kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the most fun thing about the other game.
Kind of the only fun thing about it. Yeah. You were actually building a structure.
Right.
And by doing it this way, by your only two resources are gold and generic resources, you don't need a separate tableau to track stuff on, you know. It's just you have a pool. If you have a resource, you put it on your inn.
Right.
That's all there is to it, you know.
And the nobles help mix it up.
Exactly, add a little more strategy to it.
Less resources is okay.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, so that's basically the idea.
Yeah, I dig that. I mean, like I said, the one thing I would think is add some bad guy tiles that come out too, some cards. Just because, why not, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, why not?
Good guys, bad guys, they both come through town, so...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, you know, maybe you could have like a King of Thieves, where if he's in your tavern, then it's going to hurt you unless you have a certain condition met, and then he's going to help you. You know, you can, if the King of Thieves is in your tavern, he's going to steal all your gold. But if at the end of the game, you also have three nobles in your tavern along with the King of Thieves, then he's going to be attracting more business, other thieves are going to be spending more gold because they're attracted by his nobles. He's going to be giving you bigger marked multiple. I don't know. I mean, there's ways you can kind of tweak that stuff.
Yeah. Like,
play with it.
Like that would be kind of cool too, to like, you got to say the King of Thieves, right? And he hurts you unless you get him after you have X number of nobles, because then he doesn't care about you. Then he's going to rob them.
He's going to focus on them. Right. And he's going to be spending gold like it's going out of style because he's got all kinds of money to steal. Yeah.
It might be cool to have like a, you know, there are so many nobles that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it's like? Are there like four nobles face up and I can try and call one to come to mine?
I think so.
Okay. And some of them, it would have to say you have to have at least three kitchens. Mm-hmm. But others, you know, that way... And then the idea that, like, some of them might just say, when this card is revealed, it goes to the person with the most X, you know?
Right.
So that those could be the bad ones. But you could have a couple nobles like that, too. Just like, you know, sometimes you're going to get lucky. Noble's just going to show up at your door.
Yeah.
So because you have the best X.
Right. You know, and I think there would be a tile that's like, you know, the luxury suite or something, you know, that you would put on, add on your inn. And if you install the luxury suite, then you pick up the noble deck and you immediately find, you know, the lady, whatever. And she doesn't have to be in play out there. You just go get her because she hears about your suite. She says, oh, I got to go check this out.
Exactly.
She comes straight to you, you know? So that would be her benefit. And as long as you have the luxury suite, she cannot be attracted anywhere else because she loves your tavern so much. So you like locked her in. But buying that one tile for your inn would be really expensive.
Right.
You know, if an average tile costs 2 gold, that one might cost 6 or something.
So you want to know that the combo with her is going to make sense.
Like, right.
Having her there is going to help you do something else that's going to make you achieve the goal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's a lot more viable idea than the tower building game was originally. Mm-hmm. It's also a lot smaller component-wise because we, instead of having four different resources plus a bunch of worker meeples, you just have some black cubes and some gold cubes or whatever, you know, really easy. I don't have to worry about a game board because you can just build this thing right in front of you.
Yep. Yeah, because nothing, distances don't matter.
Right.
It's just what you have.
Mm-hmm. We had talked about this a little bit off the air a week or so ago, and you suggested farms and barns and things. And I think that might be a fun thing to do, like as an expansion. You know, you can add a farm, and you can't build on top of it, but if you can, and it's really expensive to buy, but if you buy it, then it automatically generates X number of resources per turn.
Right.
That you having to go buy them or something, you know, which is kind of a neat idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the nobles could give you special abilities you could use on, you know, so many turns.
Right. I think it's pretty versatile.
yeah, I think there's a lot you could do with a real simple kind of setup there.
Yeah.
I dig that idea. I mean, it makes me think of lots of ideas for things you could do with that would be fun.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I think so. I think it is a really good idea that I would love to explore once I have more time available.
Yeah, yeah.
I think. I don't have any idea what to call it other than innkeepers or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Like I was thinking maybe naming the road, whatever road that it's on.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Something road. I like that.
The King's Road, but that's from Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. The Queen's Road.
There you go.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, so there you go.
Cool.
The tavern building game instead of the tower building game.
I'm in. Okay. That's vastly more interesting.
Way more, yeah. So. Much, much more. Yeah, so there you go. That's what I got. Do we have any questions or any comments or anything to read?
We do not.
No,
tonight.
We wiped them all out. Okay.
We did.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do us.
I think so.
Okay. Don't forget about our holiday game contest with Scott King. You guys have until the end of March to submit your idea for your game pitch for a game inspired by a minor holiday, an obscure holiday. Submit that pitch, and if Jason and Scott and myself choose yours as our favorite, then you will win a free photo session from Scott King. He will take pictures of your game prototype or really any other game that you want. Second place, we'll get a bucket of 1,000 resource cubes, which are super, super useful for all you builders out there. I also wanted to remind everybody about the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, which I don't think I've plugged in a few weeks.
You haven't?
No, yeah. It's out there on the Game Crafter. Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking. You can find a link to that through the website. And, I think that's all the plugs I need.
I think so, too.
Okay. So thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, and we encourage that, send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. And you can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can come back all the time every week and hang out with us, because we love it.
We do.
So good night.
Good night.
Watch out!
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Man. Sometimes it's difficult to just sit across from you and not want to throw stuff at your head. There's a lot of stuff around here that I can throw.
Oh, man, yeah. This is a room full of stuff to throw. They would be easily thrown. And actually, most of it's on your side.
It's true. You got some empty pop
cans. Right, I have empty soda cans. Everything else over here that I could throw is expensive. And I'm not going to do that.